Hello, baseball fans, wherever you are, and a warm welcome back to the Highland Bullpen. We've got the Bullpen Bros back in action this week, and it's been a pretty amazing couple of weeks for our teams. There's been some great rebounds, some comebacks for one of our teams that's been struggling, and another, unfortunately, is stuck in the doldrums. But without any further ado, we'll hear more from Dave Jr. from Yorkshire Dave and a little bit from myself later on. But first of all, we'll head over to Alan.
So, guys, thanks for that. We're conscious that over in the UK here we are football or soccer and baseball fans, and we like to try and understand the difference between the sports. We've probably got a couple of hundred years of football watching experience between us. Two of us may have contributed more to that than two others on the podcast, but there's a lot of differences you'll find attending a soccer game in the UK to watching baseball. Do it beyond the sport. This year's London series coming up shortly, the Mets and the Phillies, and folks coming over. The game has been held at the London Stadium. International listeners might know it as the venue for the 2012 Olympics, but of course it's also the home of West Ham United, one of London's premier football clubs, and indeed winners of one of the three European trophies last year. So well done to the Hammers on that. Probably the most obvious thing, I remember first going to a baseball game, and you sort of didn't quite understand it at first, but baseball grounds pretty much have one entrance. Everybody seems to go in the one place, and then you work your way around from there. You're not going to find that when you come along to the London Stadium. The London Stadium's obviously set up with multitudes of entrances, all different gates, all different tiers, and that's ideally designed for football fans. So, guys, I don't know if you were conscious of that type of different experience, or is that how do you think about baseball? Everybody goes in the one entrance. How's that going to work in a Scottish or UK football game?
I don't know. Is that traditionally with football grounds, you would have, four separate stands, or rather, probably back in the day when I went, you had one stand where you could go and sit, and then the behind the goal, it would be just like a hill where you would go and stand on the terraces uncovered, and you would pay on the gate to go into whichever one of those stands you had you normally went to. Whereas in baseball, there might, I don't know, there might have been a separate. I seem to recall the old Tiger Stadium in the final season when I was there in 1999. I'm pretty sure, because that was, a really old stadium when it's going back. We had tickets for the bleachers, and you definitely went into the back of the stadium, and you went in where the bleachers were. But yeah, most of the modern baseball parks, they have an entrance to go in, and then a concourse that will you can probably walk around the whole stadium on the outside. But I think back in the day, they probably would have had separate entrances for the bleachers and some parts.
It's probably a fair point. Having done that introduction, I was then thinking of my last major league ground I went to, which was, of course, Fenway Park. And Fenway's got a few different entrances, hasn't it? Albeit they're sort of amalgamated on one side of the stadium. But then when you go into the stadium, I guess effectively most people are then sitting in the stand behind home plate and then moving out a bit, as opposed to down the bleachers. Is that right about Fenway, or? Is that my memory serving me right there? You're
I think we sort of went last year, and we shelled out to get tickets for the Green Monster, and we arrived quite early, and you were queuing up to go in the main entrance, which is near, the pretty much where the front office is. But I've never actually been in the bleachers at Fenway, but I have a feeling that you can gain entry round the back there, but I don't think there's a separate entry for the famous last word and there's places where you can go. I think if you've got, I don't think we realized, but we could have gone to batting practice, so we could have gone even earlier, and there's a special place to queue up for batting practice. I think we were in the bleachers pub at the house, where you can actually
Genius.
watch batting practice from the widow. It's part of the stadium. So probably not answering your question, but I think as the most stadiums are new now, I think you've got that. And London Stadium's a bit like that, isn't it? It's got different entrances to go into, but once you're in, you're not in the ground as such. You're in, where your seats are. Like in the old football grounds, you would pay a ticket on a turnstile, and you were in that stand. And you probably couldn't go anywhere else. It would be separate, and you would just make your way to your seat or to wherever you wanted to stand. Whereas in the new baseball pass and probably the new football grounds, you go in to an entrance which gets you onto a concourse, which takes you in the stadium, but you're not in where your seats are. You can walk all the way around, but you have to flash your ticket to get into your bit. I don't know whether that makes sense. Probably not.
It makes sense. It's probably, I'm thinking of two driving reasons. I mean, the old-fashioned football stadium with four stands or however many different terraces and stands, different prices. And of course, the other issue that we'll have watching football here as well, Dave and Richard, you've both been to Old Firm games, Rangers Celtic games. How would you feel about if we moved them to one entrance, like a Major League Baseball park? How well would that work?
Not very, would be my initial thoughts on that, Alan, to be honest with you. And yeah, well, it did strike me as well, that kind of rivalry. And obviously, in soccer, there's a bit more of a tradition of away fans, of sizable supporters of the kind of the team that's on the road, are turning up for games as well. And yeah, I mean, it's not just how the fans approach the stadium in Glasgow when Celtic play Rangers, it's how they're allowed to approach, the police shepherd them to approach from whole different sides, from different roads, from different, they really are segregated all the way to getting to the stadium and then into the stadium as well. And it's probably a sign of how much more family friendly baseball is. That there's never been that kind of need. And I do like that notion that you can go around the ball kind of concourse and stuff like that. I think get a real flavour for different parts of the ballpark and for the whole baseball experience. I know we talk a lot about how baseball isn't just a brilliant game. It's a whole experience as well, and maybe more so than the football game. I know we have on occasion, it's been known, visited a pub before and sometimes even after a football match. But I think the whole
Usually.
baseball day and the tailgating and stuff like that whole wider experience is probably slightly different as well. And yeah, in terms of stadiums, I think it's interesting that baseball almost went back to its roots. I think Camden Yards was very much a kind of the modern retro. Kind of the beginning of that kind of trend, if you like. I know it's a very highly regarded stadium as well. So, yeah, I think it's interesting to see when baseball, in some ways, it's always changing, but in some ways, I think they're always finding ways to keep them and us in touch with the game's roots as well.
Good. Oh, interesting as well. I was going to, but one of the other things that's quite vastly different watching a baseball game to a football game is the catering experience. Dave Jr., I don't know if you're old enough to remember the guys walking along the terraces selling the macaroon bars. Maybe we might need to explain them for the overseas listeners, but a random guy. I don't think he'd have been employed by the club in any way. He just had a bag with boxes of macaroon bars and what was macaroon bars and whatever else he had on there, selling them. So that's actually quite similar in a way, is it, to the catering experience at baseball?
It's a really interesting point, actually. Thanks, Alan. It's sometimes I think about how we are treated as British football fans, and at times I remember growing up and through the 90s and the noughties, you really had bog standard fare. That was it. It was that's what you're getting. That's the menu, and it was absolute bog standard. Here's a Scotch pie. There's a Bovril. Not to take away from those things, but that was it. But when you sample, I think how fans are treated in America, in particular, it's a really different experience. Yes, they are trying to get your money, but it's also just it's about having a good time. And I can definitely sense a little bit of that being brought into the UK in the last few years. Some clubs have realised that fans don't want to just turn up and buy that, whatever the cheapest pie is or whatever the cheapest hot drink is. Alcohol is a different conversation entirely. But I think now people have realised that there's definitely a middle ground between going a full corporate day and sitting with your suit on. And just turning up to watch the football. You can absolutely turn up now, want to spend a bit of money, have some food, that's actually really quite tasty. So I think that's something that the American culture's definitely brought over. Watching my own White Sox each night, unfortunately. There's something that we shared there amongst the podcast a few weeks ago. The White Sox brought I think it's a campfire milkshake, which is an absolutely monstrous drink. It's exactly what it says, but it's just full of everything under the sun that's going to send your kids crazy throughout the course of a 9-inning game. But even on top of that, there's just so much more. There's a bit of culture. I think that's the wonderful thing about baseball with all those different teams throughout those different states. Every state is literally a different country, and each of them has their own cuisine, their own specialities. And I'm sure that if you go to Boston, Seattle, Detroit, or Chicago, you're not just being hit with a this is baseball, here's a hot dog. You're going to get a Chicago pizza. You're going to get each of your alternates. So it's definitely something considering it.
It's interesting that as well when the catering competitions in Scottish football grounds is around who's got the best mince pie. And mince is probably a loose use of the word in that sense as well from plenty of occasions as well. So yeah, all the different catering genres that you would see elsewhere. So we touched on something there as well. So yeah, so sorry, Dave.
No, it's just actually, well, I was thinking, in case it stirs any debate on the podcast or for those who listen, my tuppence worth when it comes to alcohol in Scotland at football games, I think they should introduce it at League One and League Two as a way to bring fans in earlier to generate more money for those lower league teams that don't really have much chance of ever making it to the big time. And what you might do is a lot of local fans that drift off to the Old Firm. It's a way of perhaps bringing them back or getting them along to 3 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday. If you can go into the ground, that you can have a pint or two. I think that would really start to bring some money in for these lower league teams, drive attendances, and instead of Scottish culture, you're sitting in the pub until 2:59 in your local, and then running to the game at 3 o'clock. I've been there myself when people look at each other and think, actually, do we really want to go to the game? We'll just sit here. We can quite happily catch the game on a feed. And it's there must be a more adult way to treat adults in Scotland. But again, that's one for the future. I don't know if you had any thoughts, Richard.
Yeah, no, it's a good point you make there, and I'm sure we've got no idea what you're talking about when you see people sometimes just think to themselves, we can just stay in this pub and not venture through the pouring rain and the freezing cold to treat ourselves to a nil-nil draw on a wet Tuesday night in Arbroath or similar. No, I think it's a good point about the perhaps trialling the kind of alcohol, a bit of grown-up approach in the lower leagues in Scotland. I've always said the lower leagues should play in the summer months as well. I've always believed that would be a good opportunity for them to play when the Celtic and Rangers aren't playing and some of the other big clubs aren't in action. You know, you might get a few more fans on a warm summer's evening to go along, particularly, as you see, if there's a drink involved. I was actually thinking there, Alan, talking about the pie being the standard accompaniment to the game of football or soccer here, in the way that the hot dog, it'd be the equivalent of the hot dog is the classic baseball food. A pie is definitely the classic football food here. Quite a lot in common with them. I think they're both originally kind of put together using bits of meat that the animal probably didn't know it had. But with the addition of a bit of spice, a bit of pastry in our case, or a nice bun and some mustard and hot dog, it's amazing what you can hide. And both of them become very much the staples of our culture as well. And I was thinking, Alan, referring to the man that always mysteriously had macaroon bars to sell. I don't think I've encountered macaroon bars anywhere else apart from football grounds. But he also always seemed to have spearmint chewing gum, but
Spearmint
only
chewing gum.
spearmint. But only spearmint chewing gum. If you
Yeah.
like double mint or the fruity one, whatever that was called, juicy fruit, I think you are stuffed. So I've got a theory that somewhere some massive container ship containing spearmint chewing gum capsized at some point in the early 80s, kind of like whiskey galore apart from the chewing gum. And actually, those guys managed to get hold of all the containers that floated ashore. As well, but no, a final point on the food kind of thing is that Scottish football clubs have always treated you as though, yes, we'll take all your money, but consider yourself fortunate that we're willing to do it for you. You know, that's their approach to customer service. Whereas
Yeah.
actually, I think the American experience is just so different and adds so much to it as well. So I hope all the fans of the Phillies and the Mets that come over here, I mean, too. Two fairly tough crowds, I would suggest. I think folk from New York and folk from Philadelphia both have reputations for not being shy when it comes to giving their views on things, but I'm sure they'll find their cuisine that will make them forget they're several thousands of miles away from their cheesesteaks for the Philly fans as well. So yeah, a lot of good stuff awaits them when they come over for the London series.
Yeah. The other aspect I was thinking about here as well, and we did sort of touch on it, is like traveling fans or away fans. I mean, it's one of the things that I genuinely enjoy about. I've been to a few Tigers games away from home, so to speak. It's just as far traveling as it is going to the home games, obviously, but you end up sat beside fans of the other team, and you have genuine conversations with people. People have a bit of banter with you. There's no aggression. I did sit there at Fenway Park last year, and the Red Sox were scoring, and people were getting up and cheering, and I still had my Scottish aggression in me, thinking, ah, oh, they'd annoy me. I wish they wouldn't do that. But it was just actually a great experience to enjoy seeing that, whereas the traveling fans experience in Scotland and really across Europe is, as you said, Richard, you're met off a train, you're told to walk into the ground from one particular angle, you're hemmed in. If there's 50 police or 100 stewards in the ground, they'll pretty much all be around your 500 away fans, looking after them, watching over them. The catering experience and such like in there is still the same, although away fans will probably grudge spending money on the home team. So yeah, very different, very different types of experiences. And I think we'll maybe chat about traveling for away games shortly, because Dave Jr. is probably going to introduce us to something shortly, in which I might fall into that category as well, folks. So, Dave Jr., you've got some exciting news for the Highland Bullpen and our friends across the pond.
Yeah, look out the Estes, boys. Get the passports out. So up until this point, as a foursome, we have made our way across to the Netherlands. nip down to London to see the baseball, but we thought as a group, let's see what the States has in store for us. So we've currently got plans to visit Chicago, which will take in games for the White Sox and the Tigers in four games against each other. At the moment, I can see which way those games may go. However, we're booked in to travel over to Chicago at the end of August. I can't quite remember the dates, but it's to cover that four-game series between the White Sox and the Tigers. Very kind of Richard and Dave to also come along and laugh at my team. I know that we'll all get on board with whatever the results are, but it's a good chance to take in a wonderful city in Chicago. So we'll be using all the possible contacts we can to meet up with as many interesting characters, to see as much of the local architecture, genuinely, and to take in whatever we can throughout the day. No doubt we may pass the Tilted Kilt as well, which is on my list. Please don't look at it if you're at work, anyone. But the Tilted Kilt might—it's a touch of home,
Such as
I
Scotland.
believe. Yes, it'd be rude not to go along, but no, really, really excited. I am. I've said to you guys as well. I'm really touched and honoured that you'd want to come along. It's your time, it's your money, to come along to Chicago. I'm hoping to repay the favour one day. I'd love to get along. I've been to Detroit before, but I'd love to come along to Boston and Seattle in particular, to be honest. It would be great to travel to as many grounds as we can over our remaining years, of which we hope there are many on this earth. So, first stop will be, sorry, Dave, one, first stop will be Chicago, via Dublin. Richard's spending 2 weeks in Dublin, I believe, beforehand, just to take in his own sights, his own cultural journey. Alan and I will, our feet will barely touch the ground.
Mainly in the Temple Bar area.
I've actually arranged a flight via London.
That's because you're still banned from Dublin, but we are very much looking forward to it. If anyone listens, that would be keen to meet up or to put forward any suggestions where you believe we should go, please feel free to get in touch with us. It would be fantastic to explore those opportunities. So it might be worth going back to you boys, and if you've got any initial thoughts.
Just one thought from me. You're very gracious in how nice it is of us to come along. But the reason I'm coming along is my record for watching the Tigers in the USA is one win out of eight games. So I was not going to miss up an opportunity to see the Tigers play the Chicago White Sox in four games. If I come back with a 1-11 record, I think I'm going to get banned from Detroit and following Detroit Tigers for the rest of my life. So yeah, it'll be great fun having being in there in person with you, having that rivalry, and if you take me into the depths of where the hardcore White Sox fans are, I'll be careful what I wear to the game on that day. But I wonder the two neutral lads, what's your initial thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm really, really excited, to be honest with you. And I know we mentioned that the London series this year, but obviously we're at the previous London series where we met baseball fans from Chicago as well. There's some really memorable encounters there. And although from Dave Jr.'s perspective, they were on the wrong side of Chicago, so to speak. I think, yeah, we'd all agree they were great company, very knowledgeable. And we're really looking forward, as Dave Jr. says, to getting a chance to meet up with other our Chicago fan, baseball fans during their time in that city as well. And obviously a great city. I've never been, hugely important city in America's history as well. It remains very much one of the great cities of the country, I think. So yeah, it should be absolutely fantastic. We're very lucky that Dave Jr.'s been before, as you can imagine, as a White Sox fan. So he's been a trailblazer, so he can keep us right and stop us falling into any dens of sin and iniquity. Oh, actually, to be honest with you, we're rather hoping you would help us fall into those, to be honest with you, Junior. Yeah. In the unlikely event we couldn't find them ourselves. But no, very much looking forward to it. And I know Yorkshire Dave's a very far travelled man, but I think even he can hardly contain his excitement at the prospect of hitting Chicago.
It is a great town. It really is. And that's where we were based when in 99, when took in quite a few games. It was almost like when I first got in, I'm sure I've said this before, I first got interested in baseball, I suddenly found out that was the they were going through a period where they were tearing down the old ballparks, and I was desperate to go and see, in particular, Tiger Stadium and the Milwaukee's old County Stadium. And but we were based in Chicago, had a week or so there, and took the train up Lake Michigan to Milwaukee, the Brewers. That was great. Had a couple of nights there. And we actually didn't stay in Detroit. We flew in and out of Chicago just for the game, which was quite an experience. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it is comparable with New York, Chicago. That was my experience of it. It was just a very exciting place to be. So, and there's some, as you can imagine, there's some good old speakeasy style pubs there that can introduce you to it.
Excellent, excellent.
We're going to be well sorted, I think. And yeah, and absolutely very much looking forward to seeing the baseball as well as the city and the speakeasies. Definitely like the sound of that. And an interesting series will be as well. The Tigers, Alan, of looking at how our teams have performed over the last couple of weeks. That Dave Junior, who tends to find some very interesting stats, spotted the fact that as of today, as of when we record, that our teams, myself, Alan, and Yorkshire Dave's teams, have enjoyed a 7-3 record over the last 10 games. Dave Judah's own team, less like a slightly different record over that stretch as well. But it does suggest, I think, that certainly from a Mariners perspective, we've won every series we've competed in since the last episode there, including winning series against the World Series contend winners and finalists and the team they beat last year, as well as a winning series just off the back off of the Atlanta Braves as well, who are a fearsome outfit to contend with this season as well, and I think could do very well again. So yeah, from a Mariners perspective, it's all the pitching that we hoped before the season would be an absolute strength of the franchise has quickly become that, after the first few games and a bit of the kind of the rust got shaken off those arms. They've been terrific, really, from start right through the starting rotation. Great support from the bullpen, and that's carried the Mariners on this recent run. We still need the bats to heat up a bit. I think the Mariners are second in terms of ERA, but only 27th in terms of the average scores that the bats are putting together. So we can't rely on pitching forever. At some point, the guys with the bats will have to deliver as well. But yeah, it's been a really, really positive turnaround to the Mariners as well, and a consistently good spell for the Tigers as well, Alan.
Yeah, no. Again, as we record, Tigers have a day off today, but they have won their last four series. We've left April with a winning record. For those of you who've been with us on the podcast for a few years, that's the Tigers have generally not enjoyed a season winning record. But what I've noticed, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but generally very poor starters, the Tigers. So that gives us a bit of hope. Casey Mize is pitching excellent. Talk of him in the running for awards at the end of the seasons. Jason Foley's closing and bringing out the saves for Detroit. Number of positives there. A lot of folks saying we're winning one run games. No harm in winning the tight games. That shows a good attitude, shows a bit of professionalism. But yeah, question marks over the fence. Former number one pick Spencer Torkelson struggling a wee bit. Not for me to comment on why that would be, and I'm sure the guys are working with him. He's been moved down the order a wee bit. It takes a wee bit of pressure perhaps off him, but yeah, it's a it's sort of exciting times. There's a I maintain my hope that Detroit sport is in a positive way up just now, and let's hope there's a good steady bounce here, and let's hope that the Tigers keep going, and I can't wait for August.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, The Red Sox as well, Yorkshire Dave, have put together a nice strong run of late, 7-3 over the last 10 games as well. Do you have confidence that that's going to be the way forward, the direction of travel for the boys from Fenway, Dave? Are they going to keep up this momentum?
Well, that's the big question. Sort of listen to a couple of podcasts, and they can be extremely critical, as I've said before in Boston. My goodness, I don't mince their words, but even they're having to admit that some good things are happening at Fenway Park and Boston Red Sox. You mentioned the Seattle. Second in ERA in the whole of MLB. Boston is top, and this is despite what was shown up as being a major criticism of the front office not really investing in starting pitching, although they did get in Lucas Giolito from the Dave's White Sox, but he's injured and out for the season. So they're five starters. We're really not expected to do well, and I have to say that they started off brilliantly, and three of those five are currently out injured. They brought in two or three other guys to take their place, and they're still backing it up with a 2.57 ERA. And a lot of the credit must go to the pitching coach. The new pitching coach is Andrew Bailey, and although I even heard him almost getting criticized and accused of being possibly the reason behind there were so many injuries to the starting pitching, which was interesting because I think we spoke about injuries the last podcast, didn't we? And we were speculating that it was maybe a concentration on trying to get that, the real fastball and the 100-mile out pitch. But these guys were saying that actually, this is not what the starting pitchers are pitching at Boston at the moment. They're more sliders and breaking balls. And the suggestion is that the reason why these pitchers are getting injuries is that they're being introduced and being asked to make different pitches into their pitching arsenal. And so these sliders and the breaking balls that they perhaps didn't use before, and that is putting more stress on different parts of their arm muscles. Now, I'm not too sure about that. I think it could be a little bit of bad luck. I think he's doing wonders with the pitching staff. The Red Sox lead the MLB in shutouts. Have had six. Cutter Crawford, a marvelously named starting pitcher, is one of the best individual ERAs in baseball. And then on top of that, I was hearing in the match tonight, which looks like it's not going the right way, but never mind. Boston's outfield lead the league in on-base percentage and up there in average as well, I think. And big part of that is Tyler O'Neill, who is joint second in home runs hit this season with nine. Only Mike Trout and Gunnar Henderson has more with 10. And even the catchers, we've got a sort of a platoon system there of Connor Wong and Reese McGuire, and their combined catcher batting stats are the best in baseball. It's on base percentage and average. So there's a lot of good things going on there. And 18 and 13, it might become 18 and 14, but that's a target to 95 wins, which would obviously get you into the playoffs. But we're only a fifth of the way through the season. So is this sustainable? Well, we'll find out. But I'm really pleased with the way things are going for in Boston.
No, absolutely. I know we turn to great pitching because you rightly mentioned there about the quality of the pitching, and we'll turn to great pitching and a great pitcher in a few moments' time. But before we do that, we have to, and as kindly, as gently as we possibly can, ask Dave Jr. what his latest thoughts are on the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I really think you should have maybe finished with Dave. Dave should have been the closer tonight, I think. It sounded great down Fenway. Yeah, I just it sounded like you were having to go to a funeral there, Richard, when you introduced me, which isn't too far from the truth. So picking up from the where the White Sox were a few weeks ago, not much has changed. The injury situation is still there. It doesn't really matter because even with one or two guys in there, it's been poor. I think I mentioned that the pitching had been really, really quite good. The problem with that is when the bats aren't firing and the pitchers are doing well, it's not going to be long before the pitching takes a bit of a hit as well. It's only so long that these guys can try and see you through two, three, four innings before the inevitable strike or strikeout, but before the inevitable just hits home. And with the bats just not swinging at all just now for the White Sox, we've been shut out in so many games. So again, shut out is just not scoring, which is pretty rare in baseball. And it's, I think, already by the end of April, we've been shut out just as many times in April as we had in the all of each of the prior three seasons. Just to give you an idea of how poor things have been. Things have actually picked up in the last week or two with the batting, but that pitching, it could only hold out for so long before it's just started to tail off. We've made a few, actually multiple transactions between the White Sox and our feeder clubs in AAA. Again, just trying to shuffle that pack, trying to just bring something in to keep us going. A lot of rookies pitching, making great impact, but just not always being backed up by either the bats or the bullpen. So, again, some signings in the last few weeks have done well. They've come straight into the team. We managed to somehow sweep. It's the first time the White Sox have swept anyone, which in a bit of a disgusting stat, it's the first time the White Sox have swept anyone since June of last year. And to give you an idea, when the White Sox were competing last year, it just shows it's coming on for about a year since the White Sox have swept someone. And of all teams, it was the Tampa Bay Rays, who they probably aren't having the best of seasons in the AL East, but they are a very competent team. So to come out of that with 3 wins from 3 was fantastic. However, we followed it up with 3 losses at home to the Twins, who have now won 7 games against the White Sox this season. I don't think we've won a single game against the AL Central. The Tigers swept us. I think the Royals swept us. The Twins have swept us twice now. And we've yet to play. Oh no, I think we've played the Guardians, but we may have picked up one there. So things are not going too well, Richard. They don't look like they're going to get much better anytime in the foreseeable. We have a series coming up against one of the London entrants from last year, St. Louis Cardinals. I'm not sure how they're faring this year, but at the moment, if you're a visiting team, you've got to want to play the White Sox just now. It seems to be a bit of a pushover, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, we've all had them with our teams. We've all gone through tough times. Just have to, I know you will, just kind of see it out. Keep cheering on the White Sox, and just there will be a turn. Fortunes will turn, but as you say, it might be a little bit of time before you guys are back heading in the right direction. But certainly, what you could do, what you could give for a picture of the quality and the control of Greg Maddux. If you only had one or two of those, somebody that could help keep the score down while your guys try and find their form with the bat. And I actually just heard Greg Maddux talked about the other day, but in the context of somebody, one of the guys from Fenway, being talked about in that context. Maybe Yorkshire Dave, it was your man Tanner Houck, is that right?
Absolutely right. Yes, we're talking about how good, surprisingly good, perhaps the Boston pitching has been, and Tanner Houck is, I think he was the fifth guy in the rotation. But yeah, the other week, I think it was the 18th of April, he completed a game. It's one of only 6 complete games in the whole of MLB this season, by which we mean he pitched throughout the entire 9 innings, which used to be not that long ago, used to be a lot more common than it is now. It's quite a rarity. And It was a really quick game. It was the quickest game in 14 years, which the commentators seemed to like. It took only an hour and 49 minutes. It was the shortest nine-inning game since June the 2nd in 2010. And yeah, it took only 94 pitches, 69 of them were strikes. And what brought my attention to it was that the piece that I read referred to it as a Maddox. Now, I'm familiar with Greg Maddox because when I started watching baseball on Channel 5, he was active then for the Braves, and it was a fantastic pitcher. And so I was intrigued to find out what this definition was. So a Maddox is named after Greg Maddox, and it's described as a start in which a pitcher tosses a complete game shutout, so it must be a shutout, on fewer than 100 pitches. And it was named after him, and the term was coined by baseball writer Jason Lucart. Greg Maddux himself, it's worth mentioning his career. He pitched 109 complete games in his own career, which spanned 22 years, notably for the Braves, as I mentioned. That's between 1993 and 2003. Won the World Series in 95, had a career record of 355 and 227, 355 wins, 227 losses, career ERA 3.16, with strikeouts, 3,371 strikeouts. So he's 10th all time. I think Scherzer and Verlander, the active pitchers, now poised to overtake him. But yeah, if you've done a Maddox, you've done something pretty special and pretty unique, especially these days when pitchers, you're lucky if they go five or six innings these days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can remember that era as well of Greg Maddux and other great pitchers actually in that Atlanta Braves franchise at the time. But I think he was always renowned for his control, wasn't he, Greg Maddux? He's just, he could just paint the corners, as they say, and he had such, a good range of pitches, but also just as the level of control made him just, I think, a really special pitcher as well, a Hall of Famer as well. I think it's 10 years ago this year since he was elected, chosen for the Hall of Fame, and a very well-deserved entrant as well. And it's funny in a series that we've talked about the injuries that so many pitchers are picking up. And I know you mentioned there's a theory that it's to do with trying to add different types of pitches, and as you say, using different muscles, different tendons, all that kind of stuff. Greg Maddux only missed 2 years and is 2 years, 2 weeks in his entire 22-year career. 2 weeks he missed with a lower back strain, I think, in the early 2000s. So there was somebody pitched so long, so well at the very top of his game, and yet was able to maintain that level of fitness and avoid injury as well. So I suspect in the months and maybe a couple of years to come, we might discover a bit more about why so many pitchers are coming down with the same types of injury as well. But certainly, like, so if you've done a Maddox, then absolutely, you can be exceptionally proud of yourself as well. And maybe in a future episode, I'm reading a book just now called How Baseball Explains America by Hal Bodley. And he talks then about how pitchers, as you mentioned, exactly as you say, Yorkshire Dave, he said the bullpen, that was where people went to try and pitch themselves back into the starting rotation. Pitchers just generally, the normal would have been to last the game. And so it was there. And then as time went by in the last, maybe five decades or so, of going to having relievers and closers and all the various kind of different levels and types of pitcher as well. But in any era, Greg Maddux was special. And yeah, as you say, I think your man Tanner Houck can be pretty proud of his achievements and his performance that day.
Yeah, 100%. And he followed it up with his next outing. I think he pitched 6 2/3 innings. So yeah, I don't think it's by any means a fluke. And as I said before, I think they've got a good setup there, good pitching coach, and it's paying dividends. That's what they're saying, that good pitching will always be good hitting, and you can't have too much good pitching in a baseball team.
Absolutely. And Mr. Maddox, of course, I think he started out in Chicago himself with the Cubs. I think that was the other team that Greg Maddux, had a connect, a long-standing connection with as well. And just to remind folks, we are, and we will update you next episode on our journey towards Chicago, what we're doing next as we prepare for that trip as well. But do get in touch if you get any thoughts, ideas about how we can make the most out of our Highland Bullpen road trip to the Windy City. And with that, that's the close of the Highland Bullpen this week. Thanks for listening and tune in next time.